Okay, we'll call to order the Board of Supervisors meeting at 8:45 on the clock. We will start by reciting the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
This is the Board of Supervisors meeting for Wednesday, January 31st, 2018. The Open Meeting Act is posted on the east wall. Attendance by observation. Jurgens Hill, Dorn, Lytle, Byers, and Tiemann. The consent agenda. Approve minutes of the meeting held January 17th, 2018. Approve all claims through January 31st, 2018 in the amount of $491,657.82. Approve and place on file correspondence received. Approve specifications and call for bids for the spring 2018 rock and gravel. Bids to be opened on February 28, 2018 at 9:15 a.m. Approve specs and call for bids on fuel for the county. Bids to be opened on February 28, 2018 at 9:30 a.m. Approve appointing Mike Klein of Adams to a three-year term on the Board of Variance to fill a vacant seat. Approve funding for Gage County Government Day meal for school participants at approximately $5 each. Approve utility permit number 1087 to Windstream, Nebraska, Inc. will be boring in a 2-inch diameter by 50-foot long, 5-foot below the bottom of the ditch and then north shoulder of the road to replace bad splice, and 50-foot of cable located in the southeast quarter of Section 19, Township 3 North, Range 6 East, which is Riverside. Receive the county audit for the fiscal year ending 6/30/17 and place on file.
I would move to approve the consent agenda.
Second.
A motion by Byers, seconded by Tiemann. Mike Klein is Karen Stowes was the one going off of the variance board. We approve that. Just a quick comment. We do have one on the zoning board, too, and been visiting with John, and we're trying to get somebody from down in that area. Dave Zimmerman would like to go off whenever we get somebody to replace him. He's agreed to stay on as long as or until we have somebody to replace him. But John's been visiting with some people down there. Anything else?
Any ideas?
If not, vote. 6-0 in favor. Regular agenda. Comments from the public and requests for future agenda items. Seeing none, we'll move on to committee reports. Building and ground, winter lights.
Okay, Dave was in earlier. We really don't have anything. Everything is going well. I think the attic burned up last night, but it's okay. We'll make it. It just fell down into Roger's office. And so, no, everything's going well. We are advertising for bids. You probably already noticed on the demolition on the house over here, and we're taking the bids, have the bid process. Anybody wants to bid, and they need to get a hold of Davey if they want to take a look inside and see what they want to bid on. So that's it.
And we did. It did have somebody down and gave a quote if we wanted to put in the Yant building over there. I don't know. We'll talk about it here, I guess. Oh, maybe we can talk about it in law enforcement. We'll talk about it in law enforcement with the with the app down for the bus stop. Yeah, we'll talk about that in law enforcement. Equalization. Nope.
Everything's equal.
Everything's finance and insurance. Terry.
Okay. Not a lot of large ticket items this time, although it doesn't reflect the total. Keating, O'Gara, Nedved, and Peter Professional Legal Services, $16,740. Region 5 Systems, $13,195. USPS Hassler, postage per meter, $15,000. Washington County Sheriff's Office, housing inmates, $13,950. And that is the large ticket items this pay period.
When you mentioned Keto O'Gara, then last week when we were on Quibi, then Don texted, we were up to total so far for the lawyers that we paid on the Beatrice 6 has been $1.74 million. $1,740,000.
So far.
So far. That's bills we, and I don't know if that would have included those then. No.
That just came in. So
those came in, yeah. So that was as of last Thursday.
$1,740,784.46.
$84.40. So,
And then we talked about the on the consent agenda, giving money to the American Legion for the county government day to feed the kids, and then a different agreement for the extension office. There'd be no cost there. It would just be changing the rules of the extension board.
Oh, we didn't put that on there. Did we? We didn't put that on the agenda. No, you're right. We talked about it. We will have it on next.
We'll have to tell Nicole that did not go on this week's
tell
agenda.
Tell Nicole didn't go on this one. I thought we were, yeah. That was,
unless you got it on the wrong one.
Yeah. We had it on last time, but we didn't this time. No, we did. You're right. We did but talk. Nicole was here.
She's putting together the extension board again. It's been inactive for several years.
So. Will it be on next month's next meeting agenda?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Must have been thinking of the last agenda I had it on.
I'm assuming that you saw that already, Rogers.
Yeah. Proposed change.
Just minor changes.
Yeah. Human resources. Nothing. Law enforcement, emergency management.
Couple of things. Guess I'd like to just discuss briefly here a little bit about number three on Gus's sheet from the other day. He had brought up that there's some federal surplus units that are going to be available, looking like $8,000 to $12,000. Gus, I don't know if you want to kind of fill everybody in that wasn't here Monday morning on to your thinking behind that.
Well, as Gary said, these are, I think they have three of them. At the surplus facility down in Kansas City, and our local office up here in Lincoln told us about it. We'd been looking around. We have a 2003 Durango that we're going to have to start looking to get rid of it. The only reason I'm considering these, or one of them anyway, is because that would be in more of the administrative side, and it's not going to be an active patrol car, so you wouldn't have the wear and tear on it. They're rated by government, and they're like a 2.5 or 2.9, which means they're pretty good shape. They have right around 100,000, some a little less, some just a little more. They have some of the police equipment already installed in them, and they're police package Tahoes, 4x4s, 2010s, I think they were. And they thought the numbers would be between 8 and 10, 8 and 12 in that area. So it's hard the way things are right now to justify a new car for administrator. That's just, I can't hardly do that, really do that. But it might be a way to get foot in the door and get something that's going to last us longer, because when we had that cold spell a while back, the one that I need to get rid of pretty bad is knocking pretty good when it's cold out. So, and it was never a designed police vehicle. It was off a local lot in 2003. That's pushing it for a sheriff's car. So that's why I brought to your attention. The money was budgeted for, I think, three, and we got cut to where it was down to two, and only about, I think one, I think it was this time around. So there's probably going to be some in there if these pan out. I don't know. But I just going to let the board be aware of that. I'm at least looking at one of them anyway. They usually shoot you a deal and let you get more if you get a better price on it. But right now my concern is one basically right now. So that's kind of where we're at with it.
Would these be good enough where if an administrator had to go on road duty,
oh, yeah,
moving forward, they're in good enough shape for that?
I think what most of them are, looks like from Homeland Security, which tells me it's probably like veteran hospital facilities, you know, where they use them to drive around. So I don't think they're beat up, nothing too terrible. Not like Border Patrol type vehicles. They're just more around parking lots and stuff. So we're going to, they said to bring some out because another agency wants to get one right now, and we'll take a look and see if we think it's worth the money. If it is, maybe, and if it's not, we won't. So.
And if these have 100,000 miles on them now, how many miles are we going to let them get before we're going to want to trade them?
A lot depends, like we do right now, on how the car is working.
Yeah.
You know, they could, you know, I know 100,000 miles for the one there, the Chief drives, that's going to be a long time. You know, if you're going to put 50,000 miles on, because I've had mine, what, 7 years, I'm just going to be approaching 55, 60,000. So it'll last quite a while. In that scenario, so
when these have equipment on, you know, usually when we buy a new patrol car or whatever, it's about an $8,000+ package. You're not looking at installing that type of
these. No, these won't have that kind of. They're basically, you know, if it's got a light bar, it looks pretty good. We'll just keep that one on there and put the console and radio in. It's a whole different. There's no radar or any computers or nothing in these cars, so
there won't be.
Be very minimal. Yeah, it wouldn't be nothing
not
like
for
that.
Administrators.
Nope.
Okay. Because then I'd question spending this
type
of money, and you're spending, you know, $8,000+ on
equipment,
installing the equipment, not getting the full use out of it.
No. These would be more where he's got a vault right now in the back of his, being he's a SWAT team leader. Then he just puts a vault back in this one. It's generic. It fits in the back of them and throws equipment in there. So it's a whole different scenario on install for those. So a lot less.
John, the other thing would be this is about 30%. If this is one of those Tahoes, it's about 30% cost of what that last Tahoe was. So, I mean, even if we get 40% of the use out of it, we're still dollars
still ahead. Yeah, that was my thought anyway. So,
and saving money, Sheriff, I like it.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. I can't promise, but we'll see what it looks like anyway. So.
Yeah,
well,
okay.
And then the other thing that Myron had brought up, we had Yance down to look at the fuel part of the bus stop, the old bus stop property, to look at putting in the equipment or using the equipment that would be there and the cost to set that up to be able to pump fuel. So the bid they gave us anyway was $18,730. And the reason for that is, and I apologize, I didn't stop over there and look close enough, but the pumps that the bus stop had did not have the card readers in the dispensers themselves. Everything was point of sale from inside. So in order to have anything at the pumps out there, you know, for the sheriff's department to pull up and swipe a card and be able to fuel up, you got to put a terminal out there. And so that's the reason that you have this expense, because you'd have to have that pedestal out there with the computer and all the brains and everything. I did talk to the contact that I have up there from years back, and I talked with Bill a little bit, and we discussed it, and you know, this is probably the best option that we have if we want to use it. If we wanted to do something different, we could possibly use the point-of-sale equipment inside, but that would mean that every time that one of the deputies wanted to fill up, they'd have to go inside the facility to the point-of-sale, and you could set up a card reader or something in there, because that's where your point-of-sale equipment, I mean, that's where all your information was coming into. So it is possible. I guess I lean more towards what John was saying the other day. I just don't know that it's reasonable to, even at 5 or 6 cents a gallon, it just isn't going to be really efficient or worth looking at moving forward with that.
I, when we had our discussion, we wondered why it was this high or whatever, and he came down and gave us, and I thought, well, I must have not visited with him quite right, what we were thinking, but now after that guy said that, they needed to go this route, and then I'm too more like John, I guess. I don't see spending $18,000-$19,000 over there just so that we can have the, when we already are able to do it down at the highway department.
And even if we didn't have the initial cost, our ongoing cost would be that 5-6 cents a gallon, and that's just, and then we assume the liability of having fuel underground.
I think we're better off just staying the way we're doing business now, and we're doing fine. I don't see any reason to.
Yeah. Gary, what do you think with those tanks? And do you leave them in the ground, just leave them as they are, or do you fill them with sand? Do you float them? I mean, what's your thought on that?
I think we need to discuss with Yant, somebody on that level, decommissioning them.
Yeah.
And which method is going to be the best?
Maybe our staff knows. Do we have the knowledge to do that? Okay.
All it takes is a backhoe.
The testing part when you take them out, that you have to go through that, I'm aware of.
There's not that many people that do that around here anymore. I mean, GE, Wayne used to.
I don't know if he still does
He's
or not.
He's not licensed anymore, I don't think. You could do it. Run a hose in there.
The government had any Galen, we can do anything.
The other thing in.
That's right. Good fun, Gary.
Emergency management, I know Lisa will be here later on for our closed session, but did talk about the North Tower, what they call the North Tower up there by Pickerel. That cable apparently went bad, and so that is down as far as communication. Some of the way north part of the county is using the South Tower up there at Hallam out of Lancaster County. They're able to do that, but
I don't know if, I haven't visited with Lisa yet to see if and when. A lot of us thought we put that in not that long ago, that new cable and stuff. So that apparently went bad, that no communication there. They're working on it. We haven't lost all communication. They're able to move it, stuff around and everything, but we'll see what ends up there. Road and Bridge.
Okay. Last week, Cat delivered one of the new graders. It will be based out of Wymore. Adams Northwest Bridge Project is now being, the bid is being let on March 29th, 2018. We'll see. Galen has map of Blakely Township, had a drawing over by the coke plant. There's a closed bridge there. Coke has requested that be removed. It's been closed for years and years and years, I think, Galen. It's on a dirt road. Galen would like to tear the bridge out, save whatever materials are usable, and get rid of it. So whenever, I think we can go ahead to do whatever he wants to do out there with that. Discussion on the 1 and 6 year road plan. John mentioned the Holmesville Road again and again and again.
And again.
And Galen's had contacts with the township officials about our annual spring meeting coming up, wherever, whenever they decide to hold it.
And I think that copy was supposed to just go to John.
Yeah. No, the other thing I'll comment on is there February 14th, so we'll get that out and it'll be advertised, but that'll be the public hearing for the 1 and 6 year road plan. So we have on our agenda here some discussion on that plan here later. So we may have that sooner than later because there's a couple of people that aren't here that are on the agenda that we'll just bypass or whatever. So anything else for Road and Bridge? We will move in. Next item on the agenda, then we'll just go down there and do the discussion on the 2018 1 and 6 year road plan. And Galen, you said you had some more updates from last time, even, or?
Yeah, basically, there was one project on the all the projects that I gave you originally. That was left off of there, and it was a bridge project down in, I believe it's Glenwood Township, little timber bridge we had to close last summer because it had bad piling and stuff. So that is on the 1 year plan.
That wasn't in Glenwood, was it, Galen? It's the one north Riverside.
Yeah, might be Elm.
Or Elm, Elm,
probably Elm.
Yeah,
on that. So that was put on additionally, added to the copy that you originally given. On that. Otherwise, as far as the 1 and 6 year plan, just a brief thing. There was 12 projects carried over from the 17 plan to the 18 year plan.
On the 1 year.
And there's a on the 2018 year plan. There's a total of 29 projects. On the 6 year plan, there's a total of 30 projects. Most of the projects on the 1 year plan are little timber bridges that will be replaced with the culverts. There are, I guess, four big projects, and one of them we hope is the Federal Aid Bridge up in there north of 12 in Nemaha. There's also three bridge match programs on that. One of them is east of One Glenwood, which is north of Odell on the asphalt road. That'll be taking out a bridge and putting in three span box culverts in there. And then two that just got let recently are bridges that'll be replaced with big multiple culverts on that. One of them's down North 35 Liberty, and the other one is east to 16 Island Grove. And those are some of our bigger projects that will be done on this 1 year plan.
Galen, that box culvert on north of Odell, is that on the blacktop then?
On the blacktop.
What do we do with traffic on that? Will they just go over just around the section? Or
I believe we can put a detour for local traffic around the section to the west, just around the mile, and bring it back to the asphalt there. But like I said, that'll just be for local traffic.
And then everybody else should go around from the south?
They should use the Highway 8 and over to 112 and to 77 for the semis and everything, we hope so.
I'd say put the signage way out on that one. There's some high-speed traffic on that Odell blacktop.
Yeah, well, yes, there is.
Well, but the good thing is, I mean, the state moved up their 112, you know, and we got that done last year. Because if you'd had 112 both closed and the Odell blacktop, that would have created some issues down there or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
How long, do you remember how long that's proposed? Will that be all summer about down there on the Odell blacktop?
2 months.
2 months.
And it's scheduled to start construction April 2nd. It was the initial.
There were three in that deal mix. What was, is this one of the first ones then of those three in that group?
No, this is actually the last one.
So the other ones have been started already?
The other one, I don't remember if it's Pawnee or Johnson County. One of them is probably three-fourths done, and they are.
Is that right?
Yeah, and they have started on the second one also, so on that. So ours is the last project.
Okay.
So we'll have a public hearing at our next meeting?
Public hearing next meeting.
Gary?
Yep. Did I misplace my copy of the 1 and 6? Because I don't have anything to look at.
Well, the next road and bridge, I'll actually have your copy of the...
At committee meetings?
Committee meetings that have all your projects on them.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
So it's
one question then, Galen. Since we don't have anything to look at, what of the 12 that we had in 17 that were in the one-year plan that moved into 18, what were they, or why did we not fund them? Why did we not complete them if they're in the one-year plan?
One of them was the Federal Aid Bridge up north of 12, Nemaha, on that one. The other one was the shouldering of the Wymore Liberty overlay that we just never got to. We got the PWF finished last year, so hopefully we'll get to doing some shouldering on that this spring. Then when it warms up, we'll have to quit again until fall. So that was carried over. Another one was over here in Blakely, and it's a bridge that'll be tore out on County Road. And I've been trying to work with the railroad, because where this bridge is positioned, it actually drains the water comes down the ditch, and it drains underneath the road, and then it goes to the railroad tracks. Well, the railroad here about 3 years ago installed 260-inch culverts underneath that. And from the edge of our bridge to the inlet of them pipe, we got about 9 or 10 foot. And I'm trying to get permission from the railroad to, when we put our twin 60-inch pipe underneath the county road, to band them together with those underneath the railroad tracks, so we just don't have a little gap in between them. So far, I haven't had much luck getting an answer back on that one.
Really?
Yes.
Huh.
let's see here. And one of them was a... east of 12 Lincoln, that was originally a bridge match project that was not accepted. It's still on there. East of 1 Glenwood, the one we just talked about, the box culverts, that's continued on the one-year plan. There's one in Sisley Township, to replace 42-inch culvert. I'm still waiting on the replacement size for that. Then we have... 33 Sherman and 26 Sherman. They're two timber bridges that here about a month ago we took bids on for a large pipe. Then there is another one east of 6 Glenwood where we're going to be replacing a 60-inch and a 36-inch metal pipe, waiting on the sizing for that one. East of 25 Paddock, that was another one of the bid that we took bids on. It'll be a bridge replaced with a triple 72-inch by 43-foot pipe. And then north of 27 Barnston, it's another one, 16-by-20 bridge, that and the pipe did come in last week on that, twin 60-inch by 54-foot pipe. So those were just carried over because we didn't have the pipe, and some of them we didn't have sized yet, and others were projects, you know, like the Federal Aid Bridge up there.
So they're legitimate items that... We're on the 1 year that we had a chance to get done in the 1 year, so it's not a big deal carrying them over.
No.
We want to make sure that we, you know, like Mark had talked here a couple years back, we want to make sure that what we have on the 1 year plan is legitimate 1 year projects, mm-hmm. as opposed mm-hmm. to something that stays on there for 20 years. So that's what I was asking.
Galen, about, I don't know if that's listed on there, what about the railroad crossings over on Hickory?
Still haven't heard back on them. It is kind of interesting, and I was out through there when I looked at that little bridge there by Coke, and I haven't been back to see if it's still there, but there was down by this bridge that I'm talking about putting the pipe in, there was a railroad car sitting there, and it had new rails on it and timber, new timber ties underneath, and it just sitting down there, and they're all put together. So I don't know. Hopefully, keep your fingers crossed, if maybe that's for that crossing up there.
It's been there for a little while.
It has been
about
there.
A month.
Yeah.
That's called a teaser car.
It might be, so.
The foreman, I actually talked to the foreman, I don't remember when that was, probably a month and a half ago. I don't know.
Yeah.
Some emails have gone back and forth, and here about 2 weeks ago, maybe the lady out of Minneapolis wanted to know where the project was, and nobody replied to any of the emails that I seen in a way.
Yep.
But the last I talked to that foreman, he actually called one time, and they've got some of the stuff out there.
Yeah, some of it's been out
some
there for a long
out
time.
There, but at one time it was going to be done last October, one time this March, and who knows? You know, part of the issue, what he explains, is when something happens somewhere else, a train derailment or something like that on basically their main lines or whatever, that they can have something scheduled and they get sent over there. So, yeah.
A lot of derailments the last 5 years.
Yeah. So, you know, they know we're on the schedule, but still to get them up here to get it done. Now that's I go, you know, we'll have that road done for over 2 years, and that railroad crossing won't be done.
Well, how long ago was that derailment happened up by Adams?
Well, that wasn't that New Year's Eve. No, that was a holiday. Remember that? Wasn't that a year ago?
I was going to say.
I think that was either Christmas or New Year's Day a year ago up there at Adams that happened.
I saw the crossings are still sitting next to the track there.
They are.
The back crossings.
That was either Christmas Day or New Year's Day a year ago, because there were like 15 trucks and pups sitting in Adams that afternoon because they had brought in material waiting to go out and unload.
That rail got put back down, and then the road boss or whatever for that track retired like the next month and didn't tell anyone. I mean, the railroad knew, but none of the people around the outside knew. So they're still stacked up. They're ready to go in.
But there again, that's a main line. So they get that one open and get it going. So that, yeah. So, but that's on the coming 1 year plan. That railroad crossing, is that on the 1 year plan, or do we need to have that on there, I guess?
It's not on the one-year plan. It's just it hadn't
been
completed.
It's still part of the Hickory Road project. John had a question.
Yeah. You know, earlier in finance, we talked about how our legal fees were up to $1.7 million. And, you know, if we hadn't had those to pay out and the ongoing expenses that we anticipate from that, some of these asphalt projects would be taken care of and be done, and we'd be looking ahead to the others. But my thought is, you know, these roads were cored, and Manelli Wagner, you know, gave us a report on them 5 years ago. We at a minimum need their input as to what putting these roads off farther down the road, and if they go into a total breakup, what it'll cost us then versus now.
What roads are you talking about?
John, when you say these,
Odell North or South? I'm talking about the ones Galen, you know, has on the 6 year plan, which is the Holmesville Road, the Odell North, Pickerel West, DeWitt to Claytonia, I think, from Hoyg down to Highway 4.
Was Mark Manelli going to be down here? Or somebody from their office going to be down here at a public hearing then? Or
I'll call and see if he's going to be down
here. See if somebody's available or whatever. That'd be some good questions then that we could ask them, I guess. Because I know in the past sometimes they've been down here when we've had our public hearings.
Yes, he usually comes down.
And you said the road bond is closed out in 2023?
I think it's 2023.
It was a 2013 road bond, so yeah. So about half done with that. Maybe not quite. That's 3 cents. Any more discussion? If not, we'll have that on the...
Well, I just want to make a comment. We've been lucky, county-wise, with the winter we've had. I mean, everything...
Is
no, I've changed my ways. Everything road wise throughout the county, I think, are about as good as you can get. So
for this time of year, they are nice.
For this time of year. So, how soon will we get the 8 or 10 inch snow?
Probably right after I said that.
You've been a good predictor. I'll just say that.
I think it's coming Saturday or Sunday.
The one model last night had showed us for quite a bit.
I saw Terry just looking out the window for flurries as he says that.
Thank you, Galen.
You bet.
Yeah.
Thanks for all you do, Galen.
We'll go back up on the agenda then, and we have Lee Timon with presenting our 2017 annual public defender report. So,
hi there.
Welcome, Lee. Name and address, just.
Sorry.
Name and address, just so we know who's.
I'm Lee
I guess.
Timon. I'm with Nelson Clark and Timon. We're at 1025 North 6th Street near Beatrice.
Thank you.
So our responsibilities are handling the majority of the criminal, juvenile, and mental health cases in the court system where the subjects or defendants are indigent. So I've got our 2017 case statistics just to show. This is cases that were open. So this isn't cases that were closed or total cases handled. This is just new cases opened as of last year. So on the first page, I have at the top there kind of the quarterly breakdown for the type of case and when we open them. And then on the bottom of that first page, I compare that to 2016 case numbers. And then on the second page, showing the 2017 numbers kind of compared to the previous 10 years just to kind of show a trend. And then at the bottom, I also have the felony cap stats, which I'll talk about. Nothing too surprising, pretty much on pace with the 10-year average as far as most categories. Juveniles are continuing to be high, but I think that's just a combination of truancy cases continuing to mount up and some juvenile neglect cases where we have children removed from the home. If there's multiple children, sometimes they'll file it as a separate case for each child. So if you got three kids in the house, that's going to be three cases, even though it's really kind of one thing that you're handling. So, but basically, strangely enough, I'm not sure how it works out, 2015, 16, and 17, we exactly opened 348 cases each year. So that's not really under our control. That's completely up to when the court appoints us. So, and that's county court and district court. Just depends on where the case starts from when we get appointed. The only new thing I added this year, just because I know that's been a discussion a little bit in the past, because we do have a felony cap. Basically, the idea is that for misdemeanors and juveniles, we are open-ended. Court can appoint us on how many of our cases that they have where we don't have any conflict of interest. For felonies, just because of the American Bar Association standards, they typically would like defense attorneys to not handle any more felony cases than what they realistically can, just because of the potential effects of if you're stretched thin, and certainly somebody looking at felony convictions and prison sentences and the extra effects on their life that comes with that, they try to keep it a manageable level. So under our contract with the county, we are able to maintain 40 cases on an ongoing basis that are at the felony level. So my felony cap, I've kind of started to keep track. Basically, when I open a new case, when I close a case, I keep basically a daily log just so I kind of know not only where I'm at currently, but it can also kind of look at the trends just to see. So I've got some numbers there. I only started doing this as of July 1st, so I've only got the last 6 months of 2017, but this is something I'm going to be continuing to doing just to kind of show the board just where we're at. Basically, the idea being that if I'm at my felony cap, then
another attorney has to be appointed if there's a new, if a new felony case comes in. You know, if we've got, if I'm at my 40 cap and somebody gets arrested on a new felony, they're going to have to appoint a separate attorney outside of my office, which means the county's then paying additional fees to that attorney beyond what my contract amount is. So that's kind of the only.
Once they appoint an outside attorney, they never come back to you. That case never comes back.
Correct. Now, the only exception would be if something happened where that attorney, maybe the attorney and the client, you know, couldn't get along, and at some point the court decides, okay, I'm going to appoint you new counsel. If I'm back under my cap, the court can then appoint me at that point. So it just kind of depends on where I'm at when those situations arise. And I've had those situations where I've let them know, you know, you could appoint me if you have anybody that comes up. And I talk to the county court and the district court on a daily basis to kind of let them know where I'm at, because any day of the week I could get appointed on a case. It depends on when the person got arrested, when the judge is having a hearing. So where we're at is for that 184 days for the second half of 2017, there are about 76 days where I was either at the cap or over the cap. The only reason I'm ever over the cap is if I'm at 39 cases and somebody gets arrested and they've got two felony cases but it's the same person, I sometimes will tell the court, you can go ahead and give me both cases. I'm not, you know, it's not that much harder to represent one person on two cases than on two separate people. So there are some times where I'll, just because of the way the case breakdown is, I'll let it go over 40, but I try not to let it go too high. So the highest I ever got is 43. The lowest it ever got during that time is 33. Right now I'm at 36 cases. So that's just to give you an idea of kind of where that's at. And obviously the felony cases, the bills are going to be a little bit higher when you have private counsel that are appointed. So
I just want to ask you a question relative to the numbers here. As I look at the juveniles, mm-hmm. moving up and staying up over the last couple of years, is this because families aren't able to support defense for these juveniles?
Typically,
Or is it because of some other reason, or were, that concerns me a
sure.
lot?
I think that overall, it's rare to have a juvenile case where there's retained counsel, where they're hiring counsel. I don't know if that's because most families look at it as it's not something worth their time to go hire an attorney, or if it, most of the situations when you're dealing with neglect in the home or low finances, obviously that's going to be an automatic, that they're not going to be able to afford an attorney if they're not able to afford paying the lights and getting their rent paid, or they're getting evicted and being out on the streets. But a lot of times I don't know that necessarily the court is overly concerned as much with juvenile cases in making sure that the family or the juvenile is indigent as they are in a criminal case. Typically, juvenile cases aren't quite as involved as far as my time. So even though the numbers are really high, I would say that I spend a considerably more amount of time preparing for misdemeanor cases and felony cases than I do on some juveniles, because for the most part, juvenile cases, you're not dealing with somebody who's incarcerated. You're not dealing with jury trials. I would say we probably rarely have juvenile trials. Mr. Harris handles most of those. So most of the time, the juvenile cases are a little bit easier to resolve. So it's something where the numbers
we'll make
are
sure
higher.
We're taking care of our youth, and we get them to where they need to be as far as the future is concerned. And we've worked with drug court and what have you relative to this issue, but I think this right. is really important.
And again, it's something where if, for example, a family is, you know, have some children that have been removed from the home because the parents are not providing the appropriate care, if you've got four kids that are in the home, that's going to be treated as four separate cases, even though I may only have one time that I'm going to meet with those parents or one time that I'm going to meet with those kids, as opposed to four separate meetings. Like, what I mean is, I'm handling all four cases with one hearing, one meeting, those kind of things, as opposed to having four separate hearings on four separate juveniles. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So,
and you do work with Region 5 systems relative to the addiction and both alcohol and drugs as far as them being...
For the most part, yeah. A lot of times we have children getting involved, and if they have drug addictions or if the parents have drug addictions, then we're always trying to push towards treatment, those kind of things. So, but okay. So the fact that the juvenile numbers are high doesn't necessarily mean that we're stretched thin on that side of things, because most of the time it's four or five kids that are in the same home that are all getting placed in the same foster care, and we're dealing with the same exact issue in all four or five cases. So it's really like one case but technically it is considered.
I'm not as worried about you getting stretched
I understand.
As I am worried right. about those kids.
And what I'm meaning is I don't think that there's any concerns about, like, my availability for the children or for the parents. And when we have a juvenile case, we often have one attorney representing either both parents or one attorney representing each parent. So one for the mother, one for the father. And then we always, if it's a case where there is some kind of neglect situation, there's always going to be an attorney appointed to represent the children. So my role could sometimes be representing the children or sometimes representing one or both of the parents. But there's always going to be at least one other defense attorney involved, as well as Mr. Harris. So.
Well, if we just get Congressman Smith to get us some more money, that would help a lot.
That would help.
Well, one other thing I just point out, too, a lot of times I'll file a case. We have, you know, children need to be removed. I'll just use a common example. We have drug addiction in the home. And so we pull the kids out by federal law, and the way we do things around here, we get them back in the home as quickly as possible. I know some people don't like that idea. But it's been shown that it's less traumatic on the children to get them back in the home with services. So we're coordinating that. And hopefully within the next 30 days, they're back in the home. And we look at terminating the court case and going to a voluntary case involving treatment, HHS, working with the family, and get the court out of the way. So, and again, you'll see those numbers jump. But we're trying to move them out and divert them out of the court system. So, and the other thing is, in the last 3 years, we've really made a push on the truancy issues as directed by the legislature. So, you know, it's one of Lee and I's favorite time to work with, trying to convince children that they need to go to school. And we won't get into that.
Sometimes it's the same kids every year.
The last agreement we had, we increased the number of felony cases, I think.
Yes, I think it originally had been 35 a few years back, and we went up to 40.
And that's where you're comfortable in your office. That's not something that you'd ever want to increase. That's your
where we're at is capacity. That the reality is I handle pretty much most of the public defender cases. Occasionally I will have Ms. Clark handle a few cases here and there, especially if it's a client that she has a long history with. Sometimes she knows all about them already. But I would say 95-98% of the cases I'm handling. I'm fine with the 40 felony cap because when I was public defender before in Kansas, I handled about 50 to 60 on an ongoing basis. I didn't have the misdemeanors and juveniles, but it was all felonies, and some of them were a lot more complex necessarily than the ones we get here. It was a bigger market as far as population. I'm fine with the number at 40. I think realistically, though, if we were ever going to up that, it would probably require me to hire an associate that could take on some of the caseload, whether it's taking a portion of the felonies and taking some of the others, or me take all the felonies and they handle all the lower-level things. So the reality is just kind of where we're at is the 40 is something that could be increased, but it would probably require additional funds for me to be able to hire an assistant attorney that could help me.
This 43 is a high. Is that the 43 that you were handling, or is that
yes.
43 total?
43 total, although I would say that for the felonies, I almost always am handling those. Ms. Clark may have had one or two throughout the year where she's handling one.
Were there outside ones, though, with outside counsel?
As far as for the county?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. This is how many I personally was handling.
Okay, I didn't know if that was how many we had in the system.
And that's what I'm saying is the felony cap is just for how many I'm able to handle under the terms of the contract. So there's plenty more than that on an ongoing basis. I would guess that if you were to go pull the county court, district court statistics, that the active number of open felony cases is much higher than what I'm handling. It's some of our conflicts. If we have a drug bust where there's four people all arrested in the same home for the same substances, I can only really handle one of those cases because potentially my client may argue that it's everybody else's drugs that are in the home. So I can't represent two of them. So we're going to have those kind of cases, and then when I'm ever at my cap, obviously there's going to be cases that overflow into the private attorneys that get appointed. So,
as you're keeping records on this, would you be able to look at that, or is that something you have access to? Would it be difficult?
As far as the open cases for the court?
Yeah, keep track of it.
Potentially, yeah. It's just a matter of getting on the court website and doing a search. Now, it's not something where you can say, hey, how many you can't go on the computer system, how many are currently open. What it would require
is like searching for Gage County felony cases and going through them one by one to see are they still open or are they closed. It's something that could be looked up. It would take a little bit of time to do it, but the court may have statistics on that as well. The county attorney's office might have that because obviously they're going to be filing almost all of those. There may be some that the attorney general's office handles.
But. We may just, I don't know, maybe we don't. Maybe the court has a set rate. I didn't know if we have a lower expense if we're going through our normal public defender versus hiring outside counsel, or is that all a flat rate?
They charge an hourly rate.
He's contracted.
I have a flat fee that I get paid each year to handle whatever cases. No, I get it.
I'm not trying to say that you're not charging us.
No, and I would say that
huge price, but I don't know if the hourly is outside.
I would say that if you're looking at the number breakdown, I think my contract is somewhere right about $150,000. I figure if you're factoring in a 2,000-hour work year, that's about $75 an hour. The billable rate for appointed cases in our judicial district is $90 an hour. So if another attorney is handling an overflow case that I'm not able to handle, or if it's a conflict case, then they're going to be charging $90 an hour for any time spent on that case, from the beginning to the end, whereas if I'm getting appointed, it's just falling under my flat fee contract.
And maybe that's something you could kind of watch, Roger, and advise us on moving forward if we ever do get to that point where there's enough outside cases, or if we do want to urge Mr. Timon to...
Well, and I mean, this in the past, I've had multiple attorneys work on it, and again, that's part of their arrangement. And as he indicated, the Bar Association gives you standards that you're supposed to look at. Quite frankly, the ACLU also keeps an eye on some of this stuff to make sure that, you know, he doesn't get 200 felony cases, and consequently, he can't spend much time on any of them. And we're very conscious of that when we look at the contract. When it comes up for renewal. So, yeah, we look at that. Now, there's going to be spikes, you know, because, you know, like right now we've got several drug cases that are going on. Several. And, you know, hopefully we don't always have that. And, that's just one of those things that you'll see it once more. Like, Fairbury will have a concerted effort on some drug raids. And all of a sudden, you're going to see attorneys appointed from all around the area to go into Jefferson County to represent those folks because of the conflicts that Lee was talking about. And unfortunately, that's just kind of a sign of the times. It's not fun for any of us, and particularly the taxpayer who has to, you know, take care of those bills.
And I don't quote me on this, so I'm not exactly sure, but it's my understanding that, because I regularly talk with the public defenders that are handling the other surrounding counties, just we all kind of keep tabs on trends and things like that. It's my understanding, I think the public defender contract in Saline County and Jefferson County, which obviously they're smaller counties, I think they have, the public defender contract limits it at 16 for each county. So, we're obviously considerably higher, but also I think we have a lot more that are filed in a year, and certainly my contract is bigger here than the other counties. But just to give you some comparison, I don't know about what the numbers are in Johnson County, but I'm sure that's something that somebody could pull from whatever contracts they have.
Well, and then when it gets to be that time of year, you know, when the contract starts coming up, I mean, I'm sure that's something Roger can look and say, hey, we have this much overflow that's not just conflict of interest overflow.
Yeah.
But be curious to see.
That's something that over the past couple of years I've kind of noticed that we've tended to be at our felony cap for big chunks of time. And then I noticed the other defense attorneys showing up for court hearings and grumbling about not necessarily being excited and involved in those cases. But, you know, it does kind of come and go. It kind of just depends on where we're at with felony arrests and what kind they are. So any other questions? All right. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you. Thank you. I entertain a motion to put this report on file.
So move.
Thanks.
Motion by Team and second by Lytle. Vote 6-0 in favor. Thank you, Lee. Next up, Jared Reimers with an update from Congressman Smith's office. Welcome.
I'm Jared Reimers from Congressman Adrian Smith's office at 1811 West 2nd Street, Suite 275, Grand Island, Nebraska. I'm here today to give you a quick update from the Congressman as far as his legislative activities in D.C., and then I'm happy to take any comments, questions, concerns back to the office to move forward with. Just as a reminder, the Congressman sits on two primary committees. He's on the House Committee for Administration. They oversee things like the Library of Congress, the Capitol Police, and the Smithsonian Institution and its affiliates. In addition to that, he still sits on the House Committee for Ways and Means. Their chief responsibilities are to oversee taxes and trade policy for the United States, which is one of the reasons the Congressman spent last weekend in Montreal during attending the sixth round of NAFTA renegotiations. For what it's worth, his role while there was to share the agriculture story of the United States, given that he is the congressman for the largest ag-producing district in the country. He came away from the NAFTA visit feeling positive about the direction of the NAFTA renegotiations and efforts to modernize the agreement, and feels like there's a positive road ahead for it. And for what it's worth, the congressman continues to be a trade advocate as a whole. That's why after President Trump withdrew us from the Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement, he introduced a resolution calling for a bilateral agreement with Japan, partially in an effort to hold the president to his word, but also to engage one of our best friends globally in an opportunity to formalize a more standard trade agreement. And when you look at what Australia was able to do with Japan, chiefly taking their beef tariffs from the mid-40s down to the mid-teens in terms of percentages, we know there's opportunities present for U.S. ag to get into Japan in a bigger way. Outside of that, within the Ways and Means Committee, the congressman is the chairperson for the Subcommittee on Human Resources. Their committee is responsible largely for welfare-related support of individuals with special needs, low-income families, and about half of the titles of the Social Security Act, more or less. Pretty much everything the Act has to do with supporting individuals that has nothing to do with the actual Social Security Fund. One of the chief legislative efforts they worked on this last year and got out of the House was a renewal of a program called MCV. MCV is an acronym for the Maternal Infant Early Childhood Home Visitation Program. The reason the congressman is a fan of this effort and led its passage through the House is that it's an evidence-based funding model, which is not something that is terribly common within federal programs. And I'm going to explain to you what that means, and I apologize, it's going to sound fairly common sense when I explain it, but essentially any organization that wants to receive MCV funding has to establish criteria that they feel they can achieve should they get the funding. And at the end of the funding cycle, they have to prove they did what they said they were going to do. Sounds fairly common sense, but unfortunately that is an uncommon way of approaching funding in the federal government. The congressman's working with his peers and his colleagues to on both sides of the aisle to figure out how they can bring that sort of a funding model to more programs so that we can get away from programs like, I apologize, I forget the name of the particular program, but it's been around since Dwight Eisenhower, where we cut blank checks to the state governments, have no idea what most of them do with the money, and they have no responsibility to tell the federal government what we what they did. Those sort of programs are part of the reason that we have some of our funding issues that we have at the federal level. Outside of that, I just wanted to remind you that the congressman does have his constituent services staff available to assist anyone, corporate or citizen, within the 3rd District at his Grand Island office. And I want to clarify, when I say citizen or corporate entity, that means anybody that has a mailing address that falls within the 3rd District. And should you reach out to us and happen to not have a mailing address within the 3rd District, we will happily refer you to your respective member of Congress or the U.S. Senator for the area as well. And we are able to help with any issue that has any sort of federal dollar tied to it, whether that's securing a passport, should you run into issues getting it in a timely manner, and the gentleman that works with those have been successful at getting them turned around in a week or less, though we don't encourage that, to getting citizenship paperwork taken care of, to getting Social Security benefits expedited or VA benefits expedited, or simply applied for if you're struggling with that process. we're here to help. And the congressman's constituent services staff have been doing their jobs collectively for a little over 30 years, and he's confident enough in what they do that he's willing to always promise you will get an answer. He's not going to promise you it'll be the answer you want, but you will get an answer, and that's one of the things they pride themselves on. So with that, I'm happy to take any comments, questions, concerns back to the congressman. Yes, sir.
Will you please go back to the senator and tell him that he does not want to forget the average citizen of the state of Nebraska, that they are very, very important, and it's not the largest businesses and the most wealthy people in this state who deserve tax cuts and who deserve help, but it's the people, the average person in this state. And tell him not to forget all of us. And after I listened to the president's speech last night, tell the congressman I am very supportive of the fact that he will make his decisions based on the needs of the state of Nebraska. And that's extremely important. And his efforts to continue funding as far as Medicaid and other funding on individuals with disabilities is a very, very important thing for this area of Gage County and the state of Nebraska. Tell him thank you for all he does. I can go on, but I'll keep my mouth shut.
You might ask him about railroad crossings.
That's what I was going to bring up here. Do you guys have any pull with railroad crossings? Yeah.
The answer is we can try.
We can try.
Yeah. There are certain agencies that I will be honest with you, even when the congressman contacts them, they tend to drag their feet. And the railroad, the folks that oversee the railroads would certainly be one of those. Incidentally, so would the post office.
Well, that's a pretty common theme with, I call it anything associated with railroads, at least as you talk to people, that they kind of are going their direction they kind of want to, and it's a challenge to get them to help or whatever. So,
all right.
Jared, do you have a card with you?
Yeah, yes. Here, I'll just pass it around.
Thank you.
What do you see, and this is maybe you don't have an idea, but I mean, what do you see? You know, we had the government shut down for 3 days there, and they put a little timeline out there here in the future. What is there a possibility we'll get something settled so we won't have another one and stuff like that, or what?
Well,
what do you hear, I guess?
Well, I know the congressman in the House did their job to try to keep the government open before, and he was glad to see the Senate finally came together to make some sort of a decision. You know, the congressman doesn't believe that shutdowns do anything positive. They tend to cost the government more money, and they're generally not a productive use of time on anyone's part, regardless of who's in the White House, running the Senate, or the House. As far as where we go with the February 8th deadline, I think that remains to be seen. I know the House is pretty unified in ensuring the government stays open. It's just a matter of what the Senate and the executive branch are willing to do. Anything else?
Anybody else? Appreciate you coming very much.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you so much
for keeping in touch and letting us know that you're out there to help.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks, Jared. Tell the congressman hi.
I will. Have a good day.
Next item on the agenda, discuss and approve or disapprove designating a county board member as a voting member for the Engage annual meeting. And I put this on there because I believe in most years we've done that. We've designated who from the board will be at the annual meeting and vote. If I remember right, I could have remembered wrong, but as far as I'm concerned, I think Eric is a rep on there, and he does a very good job, and we designate him as a voting delegate.
I was going to ask on that, too. Is that something we should discuss, the candidates? Because we actually have a good slate of candidates this year.
Visiting the other night with some people, yeah, and with Eric, that there are, in the past sometimes, as we were getting going, there was a challenge to get
people interested and people wanting to maybe help serve on that board.
We've got really qualified people this time.
Real qualified really people candidates. coming up for a candidate, for a slate of candidates this time, and people actually coming forward now and wanting to be on that board, which I think is exciting and stuff. So, well, we won't have a meeting beforehand if, you know, I don't know if you...
Well, and even if we would discuss these, I don't know if that's something we do in closed sessions.
That'd probably be something we do in closed session.
I suppose it's like a personnel. They don't.
We do have committee meetings on the 12th. We can have something there at the 12th, and then you'll know more if the slate's finalized or not, because I thought maybe they were going to possibly add one or two more.
They've been added. It's, I would say, semi-finalized. There's still time to get more people in, but, I mean, that's something I could kind of go over some bios and qualifications of the people with you guys if you want. And
But I'll entertain a motion to have Eric as our voting delegate.
So moved.
Second.
Motion by Hill, seconded by Lytle. Vote. 5 in favor with Tiemann abstaining.
I don't know if I was supposed to vote on that.
You can vote on that
one. Sure you can.
You're not going to financially be advantageous whether you vote or not vote on that one. So, because we pay you the same.
That's right. We don't. That's right.
Next up, approve or disapprove letter to the Nebraska Department of Road to support services of Blue River Area Agency on Aging. And does everybody have a copy of this? They ask for this every year. They, as they turn in their funding and their deadline here to the Department of Roads, they always need a letter from the county making a commitment or, I guess, stating our commitment.
Yeah. So you're kind of binding us for the budget, you know, but we're saying at or near. But
yeah, and this is the one we did last year, correct? Mm-hmm. And the second paragraph in there specifically, and as much as allowed by law, I commit Gage County to support the services at or near the current level of support with payments to be invoiced quarterly. And part of that is I know in the past we've had the discussion just because of the situation we're in, what if we come up with this next year when we do have our budget talk and something comes forward that we're challenged there. So then this leaves a little bit of an out for us. It doesn't necessarily, what it says is at or near. In other words, right. As long as we can, we will continue to support them at that dollar amount.
And I would move to approve the letter to the Nebraska Department of Road Support Services of Blue Rivers Area Agency on Aging.
Second. I'd also say...
Okay, motion by Byers, seconded by Tiemann. Yeah.
I'd also say the nice thing is that agency is located in Beatrice, so we get a little bit of additional, I guess, additional benefit here because we have local people employed. Plus, it's easier to provide services to our area.
And last year, just so everybody's aware of it, our funding last year was $34,860. And I believe that did go up just a little bit last year. We'd been just a little lower than that because they bought something about a van or something.
Well, we had chose to reduce it. Or give it as it was this year, and they came back and guys did.
The amount that they requested, yes. $34,860. Any more discussion? If not, vote. 6-0 in favor. Next on the agenda is approve and disapprove the subgrant agreement between Gage County and Nebraska Department of Health and Human Services Division of Children and Family Service Child Support Enforcement Program. And approve or disapprove having chairman sign agreement and audit requirement certifications. The purpose of this agreement is to account for the work of the county attorney. The subgrant is effective from October 1st, 2017 through September 30th, 2018.
Move to approve.
Second.
A motion by Lytle and a second by Byers. And we need Don or Roger, somebody to...
Basically just some small changes that were dictated by federal law where the money comes from, or federal grants where the money comes from. And it basically just changes some language as far as how the audits are completed. So and it's something, it's basically a return, and this is largely through Steve Kravitz's work with child support. This is a program that, by complying with these rules, we get a return back on some of the money we lay out for child support enforcement. So I would recommend you approve this.
How come they're 4 months late in getting this to us for approval?
We did approve one longer ago, the main agreement, and then this is an amendment for that agreement.
Okay,
so
all right.
There's all I can assume on that, and I did not speak to them, but usually when we see one of these things, Congress sometimes makes a little tweak, and so they have to go back and pick that up.
This one here says Nebraska Department of Health and Human Services and Gage County, a subaward between them. Yeah. Amendment number 2, January of 2018, is when we'll be approving this. Right there at the top, it says that.
Yeah, and I think, as I recall, they wanted it done by March 1 or something.
March 1.
Yeah. So we're, you know, as soon as we got it up here so you guys can look at it.
And I don't know, Denny, if this would have anything to do with the new tax implications. I almost doubt it, but I don't, since it's January of 2018, I wouldn't think they'd get it that quick out, though.
Yeah, I don't think. I think it's just, you know, it seems like every year or so we get these sub-agreements, and I think it's just the law is so large that as people go through and work with it, they find little things that you got to tweak it. And like I said, it operates as a benefit for the county. So I guess.
Well, it has, and I want to continue that.
That's a good question, though.
I just wonder, date wise, I look at things that we're approving back at the 1st of October always concern me.
Well, they're amending a paragraph. Looks like they're deleting a certain paragraph from the previous agreement. So this is in effect. This amendment here is in effect April 1. So that's why the date, you know, is later on now.
But. Okay.
Any more questions? If not, vote. 6-0 in favor. Anything else I'm missing there? We like I said, we did have the agreement with the Extension Office.
That's my bad.
We'll have it on next meeting agenda, so that's not something that needs to be. But Nicole was here Monday and visited about that and why that Constitution part of that. She's looking at basically making a few adjustments in there and then getting the people in place so we have the Extension Board again. So, anything else for the good of the order? Otherwise, we do have a closed session here on some real estate and some possible litigation. As far as we know, there won't be any decision coming out of that, at least that I know of.
Do we want to discuss the State of the Union address?
We could have Denny.
Denny just keeps saying, America's back.
America's back. If not, I'll entertain a motion to go into closed session at 9:52 on the clock.
So moved.
Second.
Motion by Thiemann, seconded by Hill. Vote 6-0 in favor.
Read your little card there.
Oh, and this is necessary for the protection of the public interest or for the protection of needless injury to the reputation of an individual. And like I said, the closed session will be for real estate and possible litigation.
All the names are brought up.
I don't know.
Okay,
we're on.
Seems odd. Entertain a motion at 10:55 on the clock to come out of closed session.
So moved.
And they have family.
Second.
Motion by Team and seconded by Hill. Vote. 5 in favor with Lytle voting no.
Move to adjourn.
Anything else to the good of the order?
Yeah, motion and a second.
If not, we will adjourn at 10:55 on the clock.